Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY for Community Conversations, our local current affairs program. I'm today's host, Chris Bessler. And for anyone who works in this town, wants to find a job in this town, or wants to hire workers here, today's program is sure to be of interest. It's been well reported that many employers, both locally and around the nation, are having trouble hiring new employees. Here in Sandpoint, we're seeing the convergence of a couple trends that are making this situation worse for local employers. One trend that was kicked off by the pandemic is the rise in numbers of people who are now working remotely. More troubling locally, and a harder problem to solve, is the escalating housing market, which has dramatically driven up both the affordability and the availability of housing for both renters and those who wish to buy. Today we have a roundtable discussion with several of our local employers on the predicaments they are facing from those and other factors that make it hard for them to find employees. And if you're a listener who's in the job market, every one of these employers has jobs to fill right now. We talked with Russ Bowen, Human Resources Director at Daher, which builds the Kodiak aircraft, Justin Dick, owner of Trinity at City Beach and co-owner of Jalapeno's Restaurant, and Jill Bentley, HR Director at Cochava, the technology company. We also talk with Greater Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce President Kate McAllister. It's a heck of a good discussion. Just a couple more words before we get started. Community Conversation airs each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. at 88.5 FM, as well as streams live at that time on our website at krfy.org. And if you miss all or part of a show later in the day, you can go to our website at krfy.org to hear the recorded podcast. So with that, let's get on with today's roundtable talk with local employers. We're speaking now with several business people and local employers. And to start off, I'd like to introduce each of them. We have with us Russ Bowen. He's the Human Resources Director for Daher, which makes Quest aircraft here in town. Russ, thank you for being with us today.
Ed, thank you for inviting us.
We also have with us Justin Dick. He's the owner of Trinity at City Beach. Justin, thank you for participating.
Thank you for having me.
And Jill Bentley, Human Resources Director for Cochava, a technology company here in town. Jill, thank you for weighing in.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
And finally, we have Kate McAllister. She's president of the Greater Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce. She's also a member of the Sandpoint City Council, and I'm going to be asking her to wear both hats today as we get into the conversation. Kate, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So to start us off, around the country, many employers are having difficulty securing employees. That's been in a lot of the news media. Our community here is certainly getting its share of that problem, and it seems to be even exacerbated by some of the trends that have developed for small towns like ours that have great natural amenities, as well as some trends that were kicked off by the pandemic itself. I would like to make this a roundtable discussion today, and I'd like to give each of you some time to tell about your company or your organization and tell us what it is you do and the types of positions and skills that your company requires, and what types of roadblocks are you hitting in your hiring currently. And Russ Bowen with Quest Aircraft, why don't we start with you?
Yes, my name is Russ Bowen. I'm the Human Resource Director for Quest Aircraft Company and Air. We manufacture the Kodiak aircraft here in Sandpoint, and we currently have about 43 positions available in Sandpoint. The biggest position with the most need at the current time is our aircraft assemblers. And our aircraft assemblers generally need a general aptitude of mechanical skills, being able to use hand tools, being able to read basic English, and through basic math skills. It is a position that is very valuable for constructing and assembling the aircraft, and it is a need that we need to fill immediately. Our biggest roadblock in filling these positions, and we're hearing it from candidates locally and nationwide as we recruit, is the lack of available housing. We have candidates as far out as Arkansas, down to New Mexico, and coming from Hawaii. And as soon as they start doing researching for apartments or leases on condos or to purchase a house, they're not finding anything within a 30, 45, or even now a 60-mile radius for available living situations. So that is kind of the number one topic that comes up from the candidates as we're going through the recruiting and hiring process.
Russ, can I ask you if somebody local is listening and they're interested in getting a job with Quest, what level of education do you require?
For our entry-level assemblers, we just require a high school education or a GED. And we have a six-month training program that's paid, full pay, and we will train somebody with just those general mechanical aptitude skills into the position.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Let's go now to Jill Bentley, the Human Resources Director for Cochava. You're a technology company, and Jill, tell us what Cochava is about and the types of hiring issues you may be facing.
Yeah, great. Cochava is a tech company here. We're a global tech company, so we're headquartered in Sandpoint, but we have offices across the globe. And we're a mobile measurement and attribution company, so that's like the core part of our business. We've grown into other areas as well, but really the core of our foundation is the mobile attribution analytics. So we provide mobile marketing data for our customers. And with our hiring, I have 15 open roles here in the U.S. and focus more in the Sandpoint location. And I think the problem, housing is definitely an issue to what Russ had said, but I think there's a lot of lack in applicants too. We are not seeing a big uptick in applicants in our positions, even locally. We definitely have some positions that are a little bit more entry level that we could find here locally, but a lot of our roles on the technical side require programming skills. And so that would be coming from a computer science degree or equivalent experience. So we're definitely willing to hire somebody who has the experience. Maybe they received a certification in programming. We can definitely qualify them without a bachelor's in science as well. But I think housing definitely has a lot to do with it for us too. We'll have candidates interested in an opportunity with us. They'll kind of look at the market and look at what's out there for them, and they may not be interested in moving forward because they're not able to find anything. We've hired a lot more remote employees, so that doesn't really support the community as much because we can hire them remotely where they'll stay across the U.S. I have employees in probably 10 different states now. So that's definitely a bigger challenge. We want people to be here in their home office, but hiring them locally is definitely causing an issue because they can't find a place to live.
Yeah, that's the shared problem we're having among employers, but also the people that are trying to make a living here as well, finding places to live.
Well, I think it drives up the salary ranges and the bands that you have to pay employees based on what they can find here locally. And that's kind of an issue as well, how we have to pay employees to be able to live in an area with a housing market as high as it is.
Yeah, I want to swing back to some of the kind of these shared issues we have, and that's one I want to talk about a little bit more amongst you. But next, let's go to Justin Dick, owner of Trinity at City Beach. Justin, tell us about, probably everybody here has been to Trinity, so there's no mysteries there, but tell us a bit about your business and this particular types of hiring issues you're having.
You bet. My name is Justin Dick. I own Trinity at City Beach in Sandpoint, as well as a co-owner of Jalapeno's Mexican Restaurant, and going to be opening another concept here. Hopefully we'll get some good news on June 1st. And also can't believe that I'm doing this in the current situation that we're at, but the opportunities are abundant right now. So we're primarily looking for cooks right now. We certainly don't need a whole lot of experience. Need to have somebody that can communicate, somebody that can work closely with coworkers, somebody with some knife skills, somebody that can be around open flames, and quite frankly, somebody that can fog up a mirror or has a pulse at this point in time. Some of the challenges that we're dealing with, I was heading to bed last night and I just happened to scroll through Facebook And somebody on one of the Sandpoint forums had taken a picture of our now closed on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. So we've had to shut down 2 days a week because we've only got about enough staff for lunch and dinner period 5 days a week. And just reading through, I mean, the post went viral for North Idaho. And it was everything from unemployment's too high, housing's too expensive, gas, lack of transportation. And quite frankly, in our industry is a little bit different than what these other guys are looking for. We've had some historical problems in the restaurant industry in terms of very low pay, working for gratuities, the front of the house making, you know, 2 to 3 times more than what the cooks make. You know, this has been a historical issue that's been documented. We tried to get in front of this many years ago and try to be competitive in terms of our hourly wages. But it's just really a combination of everything. Unemployment is very high right now. I certainly don't knock anybody who's gotten onto it, especially a lot of our people. You know, we've all moved to this area to, you know, spend time at the lake, to spend time on the mountain, enjoy our trails and just our natural physical beauty and resources that we have in this community. But once you move and you get into this restaurant, you end up working during those seasons. It's not an easy job. The hours are long. The pay is not exactly great, depending on where you're working, or you need to be in the industry for many years until you can get to that kind of level. And then your next thing is you either got to get into management or you got to get into ownership. And it's a big ask for a lot of people to switch gears and to do that. And, you know, most everybody we've got is 50 to 60 hours a week. And that was pre-pandemic. Housing has been a big issue, but again, we're no stranger to this in our industry. We're not necessarily looking for housing. We're looking for apartments. And we've been dealing with this for years, but I'm struggling right now. I've got plenty of people that want to move from California, New York, Texas. You know, everybody wants to move to Middle America right now. But, you know, at $3,000 to $4,000 for a 2-bedroom, 2-bathroom place, it's become pretty challenging. Transportation is also a big one here as we start to spread and get our urban sprawl outside of the community to find something a little more affordable. You know, when I was in Denver, I lived 12 miles south, and no matter what the weather looked like, I could always hop on Interstate 25. It takes me 10 minutes to get into downtown. Well, here, when you're driving from Priest River or you're driving from Clark Fork, right, a snowy day can be extremely treacherous, especially if you don't have the right transportation. So getting here as we move further out can be a very challenging thing. Trying to get employees from Coeur d'Alene is also challenging because you're talking about roughly a 100-mile round trip. Any type of signing bonus, any type of wages really eats into that. You know, that gas money really eats into it pretty quickly. And then lastly, we're dealing with a lot of burnout. You know, I'm very grateful for the employees that came back last May 15th when we were able to get open, albeit we went from about 120 employees to 49 employees over the course of the shutdown. But those same employees have been working their rear ends off since last May 15th. And as we tried to add services, it just creates this kind of circular deal where we end up, you know, everybody ends up working doubles. You end up picking up extra shifts. And, you know, we've been doing this for a year now and everybody is just dog tired.
And you, I assume, have seasonal fluctuations in the number of employees you need?
Yeah, absolutely. We usually try to get somewhere between 120 to 140 employees every year before June 15th. Right now, we're still hovering right around that 49 to 50 employees.
I assume that college kids or even high school grads, just people just out of high school, this makes a good seasonal job for them?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where we're really succeeding. 14 to 17-year-old category right now has been really strong for us. It's been very impressive to see these kids getting into the labor pool right now. A lot of them seeing their brothers and sisters, you know, over the years, still living with mom and dad because they couldn't afford to get out, not having a job. And we're seeing the younger ones are really taking more of an active stance and really getting out into the field and trying some new things. So we've been very grateful for that.
Okay. Justin Dick, owner of Trinity, thank you for that. And Kate McAllister, president of the Greater Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce. You have your finger on what kind of the broad spectrum of businesses are experiencing here, and what kind of tales are you hearing?
I'm hearing exactly what everyone here has mentioned. In the chamber, we added a Wednesday newsletter just for employment opportunities. And we have about 150 job openings that we put out there every Wednesday. And it's very interesting because it's from service entry or entry level service jobs to jobs at, you know, at Dahar. Any job you could possibly want is here. And we're hearing the same thing. Other restaurants have to be closed a day and others are considering closing a day. I do want to say, though, one thing, kudo to Justin, is that he has core staff that have been with him since the beginning. And there are several other restaurants that do as well. That says a lot for Justin and their management style, because that's such a fluctuating industry. I think we're in a situation, a very dialectic situation, where both sides have value. You know, if you are an entry-level service person, that for the first time in your life, you're making money. I mean, it's not really money that's going to last, but you're making money. And so you're going to take the summer off, you know, but then we are an advocate for businesses. And so my heart really goes out to the businesses. They're trying everything, signing bonuses, et cetera. And then the housing situation, you know, you have homeowners that somebody's offering them $500,000 for a rental house that they have. You can't blame them for wanting to sell that. I mean, it's, you know, it's how America works. And so it's put everybody in a difficult situation. And I think it's one of those where it's fight or flight, but none of us can do anything. So we're just kind of going, oh my gosh, what are we going to do about this? I remember Justin and I had a conversation probably about 4 years ago about workforce housing and building a dormitory. And I said, you know, if we can do that, if we could get everybody together to do that, I will personally go around to all the universities and recruit young people to come in, you know, charge them $75 to $100 a month. But I think this is a conversation, especially regarding the housing, that's going to take all of us together to do it. And with, you know, costs of building so high that it's incredible. We've put off a remodel for a year because it's just too expensive this year. Hopefully it'll be less expensive next year. We'll see. But everybody is in, you know, we're not in the same boats, but we're all in the same storm. And it really is going to take all of us sitting down together and saying, hey, how are we going to come up with a solution to this? So
it does feel like the local economy, despite these problems, is booming in an unusual way right now. And that, of course, is driving housing costs. Well, let's talk a little bit more about housing. So the local MLS reported the median price for a single family home in Sandpoint is now at $475,000. And that's a 28% increase from that same period a year ago. I don't have figures for rents, but I was talking to one local employer that said one of her employees was renting a house and went from $1,000 a month to $3,000 a month. That's, you know, a 3x increase in your housing expense. I'm wondering how you employers are, what happens when an employee comes to you and says, I employee that you currently have. I mean, retaining employees is part of the trick here. What happens when the employees come to you and say, hey, my rent just tripled. I need to make more money. How does that figure into your calculus? And I don't know if Russ, I actually know that Quest buses people up from, I think, Hayden, isn't that correct?
Yes. So we currently have a van pool coming up from the Coeur d'Alene Hayden area. And actually, I just got approved to now bring a van pool of individuals from Bonner's Ferry area coming down from the north. And then also one coming from, excuse me, the west from the Newport, Old Town area, Priest River, to come from the west side, just so we can kind of do that outreaching of available candidates and employees. And we're also hoping that the vanpool cost being lower than regular gasoline and wear and tear on their vehicles will help towards some of these new costs that they're hitting if they have a landlord or a lease that's coming up. Because we're averaging, a lot of the employees telling us their leases are going up or the rent's going up about 20 to 30%. Which is significant for the wages that are generally available in the Sandpoint area.
Mm-hmm. Jill, are you hitting anecdotally from your local employees these kind of stories?
Yeah, we've heard from a couple that they're worried about their rent going up, and they don't know. I haven't heard from anybody that they've actually, you know, had their rent go up and they've had concerns about it, but. That they're worried, like, what if their landlord increases their rent? You know, what will they do? So we don't have a, you know, to my knowledge, it hasn't been shared with me that someone's been in that situation and they've had increased, you know, 20, 30% in their rent yet. Mm.
Justin, is that a factor?
Yeah, we've actually had several of our staff has had their rent raised here. Luckily, it's been roughly $200 to $300 a month. We're not talking about thousands. Where I'm challenged right now, I'm acting as an agent on behalf of several employees that I have coming in from out of state. So I can't tell you how many lists of apartments I'm on and have currently been on right now, how many houses, how many open houses that I've been to, working with the leasing agents, working with realtors. The realtors are a great resource for finding apartments as well, too. They've been in this community when times are tough. Many of them have rental houses, or at least know of somebody who does. We're also in some, I've got a guy starting right now, and to get him into the door, I've got to pay first, last, and his security deposit to get him in, which then you end up signing basically an employment contract. I have never been too successful with employment contracts. They typically, one of us feels very spurned by the end of the employment contract. And you almost start off on the right foot. Somebody's starting to work for you because they need housing. You know, and that work relationship's very different. They're not coming to work because they want to work. They're coming to work because you did something for them already, right? And then I've got to take the risk with that employee of shelling out that cash that they're going to stay with me 30 days, 60 days, 90 days from there. We've also had, we've had a condo in the past that we've put up employees. I'm also in this tough situation right now where I've got a gentleman from California coming up. He did find a place to rent. It's extremely expensive. He can be in on July 1st, but he's basically got to deal with from today until July 1st. So we're looking at hotel options. Hotel is about $4,700 for that time period. It's him, his wife, and a four-year-old girl. It's just been incredibly challenging. We had an Airbnb, and that just fell through yesterday. So now we're really scrambling as the moving trucks are packing up their houses from California and bringing them up to Idaho right now. And I think at the very last, I've got a small carriage house on my property, and we've used that to house employees before as well. It's not necessarily something my wife loves us to do, but it's what has to be done.
Well, speaking of Airbnb, Kate, maybe you could talk to this before the pandemic, at least. Airbnb, folks that were deciding to rent their homes through Airbnb were taking houses that had been in, you know, long-term rental situations and using it for these short-term rentals. Do you think that's a factor now for us as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Out-of-state buyers, I mean, we have an incredible amount of out-of-state buyers who are buying the houses that are for sale and then making them vacation rentals because we're kind of a mecca now, you know, resort community. We always knew this was going to happen. It just sort of happened suddenly because of the pandemic and no time to prepare. You know, and the city council also, approved moving ADUs from 650 square feet to 900 square feet and, you know, encourage homeowners that if they want to do that, you know, but that also, I was told an ADU is like $250,000 to build an ADU in your in your backyard. And so I think, yes, we are seeing a lot of vacation rentals. Right now, we can, there, the rule is one per block. But, you know, and then Airbnb, we also collect resort tax off of a lot of the vacation rentals, which in the end helps the community. But also, if you don't report, then we don't know you're out there. So we're experiencing that as well, that people just aren't telling us that they have a vacation rental. And, you know, and it's very difficult. I have a couple friends who had vacation rentals, and they've turned them into long-term rentals for local individuals, because they just don't have, you know, anywhere to live. And yesterday, a friend of mine, she's 55, she's lived in this little cottage for years, got a text from the owner saying, you got to be out by August 1st because I sold it. And it's like, you know, that's so interesting. And the demographic of individuals moving here are retirees. So they're not really going to add to our workforce, which is unfortunate. Yes, they'll go out to dinner and do things like that. And so it's really a difficult situation for us to be in. And again, I think we all just need to get together and, you know, talk it out. I'm currently enrolled in a class through University of Utah Law Department about complex planning and how to bring all the parties together. And so my capstone project is that I have to put together a project important to my area. And so it's going to be achievable housing. I'm done with the word affordable, because that is perspective. What I can afford compared to, you know, what other people can afford is way different. So I'm calling it achievable housing. And so I actually might be reaching out to a lot of you once I start my capstone project to say, hey, let's figure this out. And then by the time the class is done in December, maybe all of the mind meld will come up with something terrific. You know, in other locations, there are, in this group are chamber and commerce people and individuals from all over the Mountain West who are experiencing the same thing. We are all in the, I mean, Whitefish, it's incredible. People are calling here saying, we want to move to Sandpoint. It's like, okay, well, we're kind of in the same boat. It doesn't help the situation, but, you know, maybe the group think will help us all get together. And, you know, we need to stop, in my opinion, we need to stop thinking of the ordinary traditional ways we do things. When I was in my corporate career, we called them BHAGs, big, hairy, audacious goals. And so we need to really think about those things and think outside the box, and maybe not rely on what everybody else is doing. Think about what we can do and what works for us. And rather than going, well, that's never been done. I believe in positive deviancy, which means that if somebody says, well, 95% of the time it fails, well, it succeeds 5% of the time. And so when you dig into the 5%, and if you can expound on that and make it work, then, you know, there are several projects. Jerry, I can't remember his name. Anyway, he's from Harvard, and he's the one who taught the class, and he had a number of examples how the positive deviancy worked, and they made that 5% or 3% really work and build upon that. So I think it's, again, I keep saying it's all of us together. Everybody keeps saying they want to help, but then when I try to put together a group, it's like, oh, I'm too busy. I can't, you know, you'll have to find somebody else. And we need the people at the top. We need the decision makers in on these things. It's great if you send employees, but we need the decision makers to help us do this. So anyway, I could talk all day. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Whitefish, and this is something that's happening in these, what they call gateway communities, gateways to big natural resource amenities, as we have here. There was a story in the New York Times just yesterday, actually, about Bozeman, Montana, which is a college town. But they're seeing so much growth there that the median single family home there has gone up 45% in the last year. And it's now at $704,000, which is just incredible. And especially in a college town, Montana State University's there, they can house about 5,000 of their 15,000 students on campus, but the other 10,000 are out there to find housing, you know, in apartments and so on. And there's no place for the students to live now. So, Jill, I'm curious, how do you connect with employees? Since you have such specific skill needs, I imagine you're using national platforms like Indeed, or you're advertising online.
Yeah. Well, and we have, you know, technical positions, but we have support positions, customer support, marketing roles, really across the board. And that was just kind of one, you know, some of our hardest to fill positions are on the technical side. But yeah, we use, I use an applicant tracking system here, and then it posts out to the job boards. And then I have LinkedIn that I use. I have a recruiter license on LinkedIn. So we can do, you know, passive outreach to candidates through that platform. But a lot of times from more of an, you know, entry right out of school, computer science degree, we used to do on-campus visits. We would travel there and meet with the students in person, try to do more of the local universities. I think the furthest one we would go to is Boise State. And then, you know, be on site with them, travel to those locations, and, you know, talk about the company, talk about Sandpoint. And it was really a great feeder to our organization, and it's been really successful. And obviously this last year, we weren't able to travel as much. So instead, we've just been posting on their job board. So there's a website called Handshake that you can post to several different universities across the U.S. They're all available. You go on there, you can get approval for your company to post on that career page, and then that college will accept you, and then you can post your jobs there. So we have a couple more associate level positions that we will share out to colleges. It can be alumni of those schools as well, but it's just another avenue for us to try to reach those candidates. Like I said, more specifically on the computer science degree, programs, but not necessarily, that's not where it has to come from. So there's a lot of different platforms that we've used, but using all those platforms, I used to see, you know, maybe 50 candidates apply to one position, and we're seeing much smaller numbers. People are not out there actively, you know, looking for job opportunities. And so that has been a smaller number that we've seen lately.
Is that true from colleges too? Are you mm-hmm. seeing fewer applicants coming just from colleges?
Yeah, because I think there's so many jobs open, you know, and if they don't know the area or the company, you know, that's not something that's on their radar. So, yeah, for sure. It's definitely still, like, I posted some associate roles a couple weeks ago, and I've seen maybe a handful come through.
In your case, is the fact that we are located as a gateway community to great natural resources, is that a benefit in hiring people that will actually move here?
It can be. Yep. It definitely has in the past really been a driver for us. But right now it doesn't. People can still come here and they already have a job and they're not looking because they can live and work remotely from wherever. So I think we're still seeing an influx of people moving here and not necessarily you know, looking for job opportunities because they're able to keep the job that they have.
Because they're working remotely. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. The remote work has definitely changed that environment too.
Russ Bowen with Quest. Same question to you. What methods do you use to try to reach out and find employees now?
So we have a new term that we're using in my department and with my employees. I have a recruiter on site that reports to me. But we have the new term is thinking outside the box. So we know that now that the pandemic's starting to lighten up and people are starting to go back to businesses and trying to get to a life normal, people are going to start going back to the movies and cinemas. So we're actually starting at the end of the month to play a 30-second video before all the movies in Sandpoint, in Hayden, in Coeur d'Alene at the Regal Theaters, and also in Spokane at the theaters there, trying to broaden our pool of candidates and let them know we are hiring in Sandpoint. And probably half of my 30-second video is showing Sandpoint, it's showing Lake Pendere and our nice area to live to try to show that the Pacific Northwest is beautiful, plus there's lots of jobs available. Mm-hmm. And going back with the schools, like Jill was mentioning, we usually bring in quite a few interns in through the summer for our engineering positions. And we actually had to limit the number this year to 5 just because we know that they were going to have such a hard time finding housing. So when we were thinking outside the box, we actually found incentivizing employees that had spare bedrooms in their homes or a bedroom above a garage or a mother-in-law's quarters. We actually found that way to house the interns for the summer, trying to think of these alternative sources for people coming in. We've also, for recruiting purposes, we, PAR to DIAR, have multiple sites throughout the U.S., but we've actually joined with two of the national headhunting firms, and we're actually using those for the first time in my career with Dyer and Kodiak to using national firms to help us with our candidate pool. And they're reaching out into the Seattle areas, the Kansas, Phoenix, to a lot of the aerospace hubs to try to help us build that candidate pool. I've been talking with the Idaho Department of Labor, and they're trying to build up numbers of candidates available, but there seems to be a general knowledge that the 20-year-old to 40-year-old group of employees almost don't exist anymore in Idaho. And the kind of feeling out there is a lot of people are going away for school but not coming back to North Idaho. And is it the cost of housing? Is it the cost of living, the cost of gas, the commute? Are those the factors that those 20 to 40-year-olds are not returning back from going to school? Or a lot of people seem to be moving out of the area in that our employable base?
Mm-hmm. Russ, in your case, can you get kids right out of high school and have a training program for them with that hands-on sort of skills?
Yes. So we actually have two new hires that we just brought in. One was able to graduate early from school with the pandemic from one of the other school districts in Montana. And he actually had family in town to be able to move to, so he's able to have a roof over his head. And then we have a local Sandpoint employee that's going to be starting as soon as the school year ends for them locally. But we do have that nice extensive 6-month training program where we can take these high school students and train them up and hopefully make them into a long-term career for them. We do have a career laddering, as we call it. So there's a career path. There's lots of opportunities for growth. And we try to help them with some of their technical skills and technical certifications as they're with the company.
That could be a good source for you. Justin, you spoke to this a little bit already, but what sorts of things are you doing to find employees?
We always use Craigslist, Department of Labor. I've got an HR gal, Ruth Wimberly, who's worked with me for almost a decade now. I'm finding folks, lots of word of mouth, incentivizing other employees, print, radio. You know, I spend roughly $4,000 a month. My only advertising right now, $4,000 a month, is just to seek and find employees to come in at this point in time. And, you know, we've been roughly, again, the restaurant's no stranger to this. We've seen this coming. It's been like this with the exception of 2009 to 2011 when we were in the financial crisis and we weren't really hiring because the business wasn't there. So, you know, we're constantly looking. We don't just hire for our seasonal. We hire all year long. We try to keep good people. One of our biggest challenges being a restaurant in this community is you need to hire during the slow times, and you got to figure out a way to make that work for your employees when the business isn't necessarily there. When you find good people, you got to bring them in, and you can't just hope that they're going to come, you know, the month before summer starts and get you through till September.
Let's turn to a little different issue as relates to hiring. And Kate, I'll put this one to you. What you've heard from other businesses and employees out there, how the pandemic affected them. I know for some, like restaurants, it completely shut them down. But it also made this big turn towards remote hiring and then remote working. And then also has the extension in unemployment benefits that the federal government just approved. How do you think that's impacting employers? Is it, you know, disincentivizing some employees from even getting work?
Well, that's exactly what it's doing. You know, but again, you know, if you've never made that much money before, again, Justin and I have had these conversations too. You know, I was a single mom at one point in my life with four kids working three jobs, and that would have been, that would have been a boon for me to be able to do that. So you can't blame them for that, but it's put our town in a weird predicament. And also though, speaking of the economy, I pretty much locked myself in my office in April and May last year, and all I did was try to get PPP and the rebound grants and everything to keep our businesses open. And it was, to me, it's very disheartening. It's like we've all made it through the pandemic, and now because of the lack of employees, businesses may have to shut down. And I wish I had an answer for that. I, you know, they're offering signing bonuses. They're offering incentives that are just remarkable. And, you know, and people say, well, you know, minimum wage. I said, none of our businesses that I work with pay minimum wage. And some of them are offering great signing bonuses. But our economy here did quite well last year. And the issue was, is that the neighboring states who were closed down, they flooded in here, and we didn't have any COVID cases till tourism started. And, you know, then that came with it. But I was worried when we didn't have the festival that, oh my gosh, because that's a $3.2 million, you know, economic boon to our town. And everybody I talked to, because I call it chambering. I invented that, Ricky and I invented that verb, is that talking to businesses, they're all like, we're doing great. We're doing great. Oh my gosh, we did better than we've ever done before. Even in November, I heard this is the best November I've ever had in my business. So people are coming here. What I'm interested in talking to businesses about is, have you thought about retirees? Now, I know the application tracking process systems, they tend to throw you out if you're over 50 years old. And so are we going to have to start looking at that? Now, that will mean like the, you know, I could probably do a 4-hour shift for Justin, but I don't think I could work 8 hours, right? And I want to be the rude waitress. But anyway, that's another story.
I just heard it. Kate's going to work 4-hour shifts.
I will. I told the fat pig that I would be happy to do that. I don't want them to go out of business. I'll do whatever it takes. But, you know, you'd have to rework the hours, and that takes a lot of time and, you know, thought to put into that. And, you know, it's interesting because I live and breathe this. I, you know, my reason why I like working at the chamber is because I literally get to be in all of your businesses, and I kind of like that. And so it's very difficult to think about how do I solve these problems for Justin and the Mahoney brothers, and oh my gosh. And so the good news is the economy's doing well. You know, we kind of say that with a question mark at the end. But we sincerely need more people. And, you know, we're a great little community, and we've got to figure out the housing. And we're really starting to discuss that while I'm kind of running forward with it, because those of you who know me know I'm a very solutions driven person, and I really don't appreciate or like circular talk. Oh yeah, we need to work on that, and we'll all get together and blah, 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 blah. And so I'm the kind of person that's like, well, then let's work on it. What are you willing to do? So I'm trying to push this forward, and we'll see what we can come up with. But right now, developers and builders aren't really willing to talk to me because they're too busy, and I probably annoy them, and that's all right. I'll do anything for my businesses. So,
Justin, the pandemic hit restaurants especially hard, completely shut most restaurants down. And so speak to how that affected you. I mean, what kind of hangover you're having from that, maybe, but also the question of, are the extension and unemployment benefits hurting your ability to hire? And then I'm going to throw this in there, because this is a question out there. Is this just the free market in action? Do employers just need to pay more in order to compete and get employees?
So I'll answer that last one. In the restaurant industry, that's a yes, 100%, that we do need to pay more. We need to be more competitive. There's quite the disparity. I showed a lot of our employees that we had one of our kitchen staff that had worked 60 hours a week, and he made roughly $1,700. I had a server in the front of the house that worked 30 hours a week, and they had made $2,500 just in gratuities. And really trying to show the front and the back how this works and why it's important. One of the challenges we run into, though, is the tip pooling. We don't tip pool right now. It brings up a whole bevy of issues. You know, nobody wants to share their gratuities with somebody who's not carrying their weight. And we run into that a lot. So we've certainly had to do some things to get our wages up. We were already at the top of the peak to begin with, just because we battle with Coeur d'Alene and we battle with Spokane as well in terms of the inland Northwest and where these folks want to go to make money. I think the larger problem that we're going to see is this is not sustainable. I think this is sustainable right now because we're all working off of our second PPP loans, the employee retention credits that are going to be coming up, the restaurant revitalization, the $1.9 trillion that should be coming down the pipeline as well. So, you know, for this short time, this is going to work. The other thing that you're going to see is this is going to come down to the consumer level as well, too. You know, right when the pandemic started, a lot of our commodity items started going through the roof. You know, we couldn't even have pork down at the restaurant because it was darn near impossible to get. And if you could get it, it was about 10 times more expensive than it ever had been. That kind of settled down midway through the summer. And we're starting to see those things creep up again. We're used to our purveyors right around, right before summertime, all of a sudden the prices start going up and they blame it on the cost of fuel and transportation. Now we're dealing with some real large issues. Our largest purveyor, US Foods, has 35 driver positions open right now that are roughly 50 to 60 hours a week. And they're having trouble getting us the food. They're also renting trucks, they're renting out drivers, they're renting out storage facilities. All of that cost comes through us and eventually gets passed down through the consumer. So I think my biggest fear moving forward with all this is when all the government subsidies run out, when we've spent all those last dollars, where are we going to be at in terms of how are we going to be open? Are we going to have to cut staff? I certainly don't want to compromise our quality or our product. You know, we saw it in Spokane years ago when they raised the minimum wage to $13.10, I believe. And I belong to many restaurant owners groups in Spokane. And, you know, what we saw was they just cut their staff completely. Where you had traditional bartenders that, you know, some of them went to bartending school or had been, you know, that's all they do is work behind the bar. Now restaurant owners are looking at the servers and saying, okay, if your customer orders a drink, you need to go behind the bar and you need to make that drink. Well, your consistency, your quality, not having enough people on staff certainly hurts your customer service. And eventually that all hurts you in the end. So I'm interested to see how this is going to play out. I do think it's going to bring some really novel thinking to our industry as well, too, so that we can get some sustainability with having livable wages for our employees and not just working off those big time gratuities that we get. As for the unemployment benefit, we've certainly seen that that's been a big issue. Anecdotally, I'm working with a kid from Chicago right now. He's 23 years old. He's getting $2,700 a month in his assistance between the feds and his state unemployment. He's never made more money in his entire life, right? And he's got student loans. He's got collections. He's got all sorts of debt. You know, he's doing the right thing. He's paying those debts down as our deficit raises like this. I think we've seen personal debt is dropping like crazy. And the other real, my trepidation moving forward is, you know, when this federal unemployment, the $300 kicks off or they opt out of it and they're not paying it, you know, starting June 18th, we're going to have this group of employees that's got to go back to the workforce, right? It's artificially forcing them back into the workforce. And I don't know if I want to be that first employer that takes somebody back and puts them to work for 50 hours a week for half as much money as they were being paid to sit on the sidelines for a while. So I think that's going to have some issues. I think this is probably going to be at least another 12 to 18 month process of getting people off of unemployment, getting them back into a job, you know, and just this right now with the way the wages are, this has created so much opportunity where folks are starting. We're hearing this all over the place, but we'll start a new employee. They'll work for 2 or 3 days. You know, they say, oh, my experience is okay. I'm going to go try somewhere else, right? And we've had that a number, you know, for just about every employee that I hire, I lose an employee as well too. So, you know, it's opened up the doors. I think it's great for employees, right? There's multiple opportunities for them, different opportunities to do jobs that they haven't done. But I think it's going to take a while for these folks to get settled and to get settled once they get off the unemployment.
Russ Bowen with Kodiak Aircraft, same question to you. How did the pandemic hit your company and did the extension in unemployment benefits affect you hiring? And also that question, you know, free market in action, do the employers just need to pay more?
Yeah. So I'll start with how the pandemic has impacted Kodiak, specifically in Sandpoint. During the middle of last year, we hit the slow point like most employers did, not knowing what the pandemic was going to do worldwide. But as soon as we got through June and July of last year, We then had an uptake in sales in aircraft, and we've actually have sold more aircraft since that point in time than in our history of the company. So with the commercial aviation being what it is and people can't fly commercially, there's a newfound interest in small aircraft like ours. And we have new issues now that we actually can't build the aircraft fast enough. And that is our drive for trying to increase our staff. It's the first time in my career that I've had such a green light from executives saying hire, hire, hire. It's a good problem to have, but it is a problem no less trying to get those candidates. So that we're fared through it well, but there's a big question mark going forward. Mostly, I think in the back of my mind is for staffing. We have opportunities for expanding locally, and in the back of my mind, I'm worried about being able to provide staff for those expansion opportunities in Sandpoint. So that is something that's always in the back of my mind is we have good opportunities. I hope it's not impacted by the availability of employees. As far as the subsidy and the impact, I have actually had candidates that I've interviewed and I've asked them point blank, what makes you interested now in coming to Kodiak and getting back in the workforce, have been out for a year. And actually, I've had candidates tell me that, I've finished all my home improvement projects with the extra funding I've gotten from my unemployment. So now I feel like I need to get back into the workplace because all my home improvements now have been finished. So literally, they were telling us that, for the whole last year, they've just been doing home improvement and have not had that interest to even get back in the workforce yet. So there's very much an impact. I'm like Justin, I'm kind of excited for that extra $300 here shortly, but there's definitely going to be an uptick. I'm worried about that because our training program for 6 months comes with an expense. We're dedicating staff to those new employees for 6 months, and it is a very expensive training program. And if we lose an employee after 6 months, it is a expense to have somebody walk out the door with that new knowledge that they have.
And how about the question, do employers just need to be paying more to compete for employees?
I wish I could pay more and if it was an easy fix, but I like most of us in the manufacturing world, it's hard to increase wages because it impacts the goods that we produce. And there's a direct impact. So there's a fine line of how do we increase our base wages for staff without impacting and raising the cost of the goods? And do we chase away any potential sales or any of those efforts? So it is a struggle trying to find that median ground. And this year, to kind of finish out 2021, we're trying to find incentive options to help incentivize the employees, try to help them with housing, trying to help them with their commute into work without trying to raise those base wages, which it's a tough game and battle to try to negotiate or navigate. But the base wages, you're definitely going to have to come up to try to stay up with the cost of housing.
And Jill Bentley with Cochava, I'll take a guess that the pandemic affected your industry somewhat differently with the expansion of remote working. But did the extension of unemployment benefits affect your hiring? And on that question of free market in action, do employers just need to pay more to compete for employees?
Yeah, I mean, I think the industry and the space that we're in definitely had different impact on us here locally. You know, we really didn't see a whole lot of impact on our business through the pandemic outside of, like you said, our employees going remote, working remote, also hiring more remote employees. And from an unemployment standpoint, that didn't really affect us. I think our kind of entry wages didn't really affect the unemployment. So people were, I didn't really have a lot of people that were out of the workforce that were coming to look for a job. They had a job or they came from school and they were changing opportunities. So I don't think that really affected our business. And then I think something for us from a compensation standpoint, locally, I think we have a pretty decent compensation band. But what's our challenge is that our attrition has been mostly because our employees are leaving to stay locally and finding bigger companies that will pay them a higher wage to stay here. So
they can work remotely.
And they're staying remote 100%. Yeah. So I think, when I look at an average, they're able to find opportunities to stay here doing similar jobs. Let's say a developer position, maybe for 30 to 50% more. And they're working for large companies that are in major metropolitan areas, but they're staying and working locally. So I think that's our challenge. So we've definitely had a lot of internal discussions about, you know, what can we do to help retain employees? Because we're competing now against bigger tech companies that we didn't have to compete against before.
Well, we only have a few minutes left, but I'd like to pose a final question to each of you, and we'll start with Kate. And we only have a minute or two each, but what are some steps that companies or business groups like yours or local government units like the Sandpoint City Council might take to meet this challenge?
Again, I think it's going to take all of us. You know, you put the pebble in the water and we're all connected. We're all connected through our community. And it's just, you know, when I don't want to start something that I can't finish. And going forward, we're going to be starting to put together groups. And so my hope is that people will participate. I mean, we're all busy. We're all busy all the time. And so if we're going to solve this problem, we have to do it together. And that includes the city, the chamber, and other organizations and business owners. It's a tough problem, but we can do that. We've solved tougher problems in our little town. And so I believe that, you know, we'll come out the other side very well.
And Russ Bowen, same question to you. Did you see things that companies or business groups or local governments can be doing to help?
Yeah, so locally, myself, I'm actually reaching out more and more to some of the HR manufacturers in Sandpoint and trying to build a camaraderie. Since we're all in manufacturing, we're all feeling the exact same struggles on a daily basis, trying to see if we can put our brains together and come up with some solutions. But it is going to take the whole community on the housing efforts, and everybody's going to really have to, I hate using the same term of thinking outside the box, but we're really going to have to think out of the box and what can be available housing or the affordable term is a tough one. I love the expression that Kate used earlier, but housing that it's available for the employees in our marketplace to get to. And I think that would help start enticing people back to our area if they knew that they could put the basics of life, a roof over your house, roof over your head, and provide for your family. That basic need is going to have to get met, I see, before we can start getting people enticed back to our area.
Jill Bentley, same question to you. Steps we might be taking to meet these challenges for employers?
Yeah, I mean, I think both to Kate and Russ's point, I mean, trying to work together as a community from the employer standpoint is really going to be a driver for us. I think the housing is going to be the biggest thing and how we can help and as Cochabamba and meet with groups to try to solve the problem will definitely be something that we'll be looking forward to trying to do this year.
And Justin, you get the last word on this question. Do you see steps we might be taking to improve the situation?
Yeah, let me just bring this up, Chris and Kate. You were both with me approximately a decade ago when we were working on the city's master plan. And the number one thing over a decade ago was more housing, affordable housing, right? So we worked with planning and zoning in our city, city administrators, and our city planner, right? And we're just now seeing after a decade that the rules, the laws, the procedures that were written to build more housing, right, are just coming to fruition right now. We move incredibly slow with getting this stuff forward. And now what we're running into is we've made the rules to get these multiplexes, to get affordable housing, to get subsidized housing, to parcel lots in neighborhoods where you typically don't do that. But we're running into the homeowners. Everybody says, yeah, we need more housing. We need more housing. Ooh, but not next door to me, right? And this comes up so often. It's happening. We've got a place over by us right now that went from one house to three lots. And you've got the neighbors around saying, we don't want this in our area. And at some point, we need to get to this point with the community at large and in general that we need it in these neighborhoods that you didn't think it was ever going to be there. You're going to have to deal with the parking. You're going to have to deal with the traffic. But to make this little town run, to have our brick and mortars, to have these great community businesses that all participate and work together, it's going to take everybody to do it.
And there's going to be a lot more to talk about going forward to try to get to some of these solutions, I'm sure. I want to say thank you to Russ Bowen with Quest Aircraft, Justin Dick with Trinity at City Beach, Joe Bentley with Coachella, and Kate McAllister with the Greater Sandpoint Chamber. Thank you all for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
That's it for our show today. If you've just tuned in, we've been speaking on problems that local employers are facing to hire the workers they need with Russ Bowen of Kodiak Aircraft, Justin Dick of Trinity at City Beach and Jalapenos, Jill Bentley of Coachella, and Kate McAllister of the Sandpoint Chamber. If you tuned in late and missed part of the show, later today you can go to our website at krfy.org to hear the recorded podcast. I'm today's host, Chris Bessler. Community Conversations will be back next Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. with more local talk on issues and happenings in our town. Thanks for listening today.